Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So the Brits are taking over the world. We'll talk about that on the Media Project and some other things. I'm Rex Smith in the Times Union here with the amazing Judy Patrick from the Gazette in Schenectady.
Good morning, Rex.
Well, morning, afternoon, evening, whatever time of day we happen to have here. And Dr. Alan Shartok.
I just want to point out that Judy has clearly been out in the sun.
Oh, we've been having a nice time,
little,
have you?
Taking a couple days off.
Yeah, I can see that.
Excellent. You know, what happens in your shop when you take time off? How does a newspaper run without its editor?
Great question.
You know, the paper gets out every night, as my editors keep telling me that the paper will get out.
Uh-huh.
Things happen, and I have good people.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the right thing to say.
No, it's true.
But do you ever think, you know, that they can't do it without you?
No, I never think that.
Really?
Yeah, they can do it without me every
Rex,
day.
Rex, do you
they
ever
do.
Think that?
No, no. Actually, I often say to people, I'm the least necessary person in the organization. The place really operates quite well, thank you very much, without me. And I worry that my publisher will think the same thing.
Does anybody want to ask me a question?
This is the guy who, when he has to take a vacation, when the lovely Roselle forces him to take some time off.
Yeah.
You're still in touch every
and
day.
If we're 10 hours away, I still do the 7:30 shot in the morning. So I love doing it. But I always, when I get back from vacation, I always say, I have to do this more. I mean, I think it's impossible to go, but when I get back, it seems so clear that it's productive.
Yes.
And that you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're a better person if you do it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I took a week off recently. Well, I was not on the show last week.
Oh, you weren't? Oh, yeah. Okay.
But actually, I'm a member of the editorial board. Do you do that, Judy? Are you a part?
I don't.
You don't? Yeah, I do. I'm a member of the editorial board of the Times Union, meaning that I'm part of the conversation every day that shapes the opinion page. And our editorial page editor, Jay Jochnowitz, was off at the same time. So I called in every morning to participate in the editorial page conversations. But I did not participate in the front page conversation. Usually I lead the afternoon meeting where we, you know, put the paper together, and I didn't do that. They can do that quite well without me. Thank you very much.
Well, that's interesting. Is your voice on the editorial board, you know, more important than the other voices? I mean, you are the head of the paper, and even though you're just supposed to be, as you say, so self-effacingly, just in the conversation. This is, by the way, one of the new words of the decade.
The conversation.
Yeah, be part of the conversation.
Part of the conversation.
Yes, just as the word so begins every sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from everybody else, I've been, as a student of language, I watch that.
It's like well. You know, when Ronald Reagan was president, the word well became the thing that you start every sentence with. Well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that's nice. But you won't deter me from asking the question since... You know, you are the head macha, as we say in the Yiddish language.
Is
the head
that
guy.
How it's pronounced?
Macha.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, see, I think I get that sound in there. Is that a chutzpah? Macha?
Chutzpah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, so do you think that they defer to you because you are the editor? Don't lie.
Clean off the microphone here. Actually, I think our editorial board is being a lot like a Quaker assembly in which much is decided by consensus.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't achieve consensus in that organization, what happens in a Quaker meeting is someone may ultimately decide to stand aside, to allow the consensus to go forward if you're the one person blocking it.
Yeah.
And we've had that situation.
Have you ever been the one who steps aside?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Oh, I see.
You have to understand, a newsroom, journalists are people who are used to challenging authority. They respect authority, but they challenge it all the time, so they have no problems with telling an editor they're wrong.
It's kind of a drag.
You know, I used to think I was a pretty good reporter.
Let me report to everybody that Judy's face just got very animated and very pleased.
You know, when you're a reporter, you really know a lot and you're a good reporter. And as soon as you become an editor, you don't have any idea what's going on. You know how dumb you are? I just have to
nonsense.
Point that out. Nonsense. Well, so anyway, we were going to talk about the fact that the Brits are taking over. The New York Times has named a new CEO that is not, in fact, replacing Arthur Sulzberger Jr. He is still the chairman and the publisher of the newspaper, but they've picked the guy who's has just left as general, what's he called? The governor general, director general of the BBC. Is going to now become the president and chief executive of the New York Times.
Well, Rexy, got a question. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Does it really matter what Sulzberger's title is? Because if he sees something in the paper, I'm assuming that he could be called, you know, the ant. and he called in, people would listen to him very, very carefully, don't you think?
Yes, I think so. I think, you know, it's a publicly traded company, but the Sulzberger family holds the majority of the shares. I think he's unquestionably El Hancho, but if you're in his shoes, you want somebody really good in the business world to take care of things. But the difficulty is he's been running this operation. It's kind of like our equivalent of public broadcasting. He doesn't have to worry about advertisers and so on. It's a very different model than what we have here.
Well, except that the Beeb, as we call it around here, and we play it on this station, the Beeb has been under tremendous pressure to generate its own money. And we've had visiting deputations come to this station saying, you guys do it. We've been told we have to do it. Now, I admit, it came after Thatcher, you know, but I think it's been that way for a while. Now, I'm fascinated by the backstory here. Let me give you a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that the New York Times and Murdoch don't always get along. And we do know that Murdoch, for example, was Rex painting their sides and made it clear that the Wall Street Journal was going to eat the New York Times for lunch on their Metropolitan page and other places section. We do also know that when Murdoch got into trouble, the Times subtly cried, "Vengeance is mine." And there was a Murdoch expose article. Almost, it seemed to me, daily in the paper about Murdoch's problems in Great Britain and all the people who are getting arrested and everything else.
Oh, you think that's vengeance? I think that's news coverage.
Yeah, sure. Okay. But, you know, let me put it this way. My mom wrote her master's thesis on Rorschach, you know, the ink blot tests, would put me on her lap and say, "What do you think that is, honey?" I'd say, "It looks like a bat." And she'd say, "You don't see a butterfly?" No, I think that there's always an internal approach to the assignment of news values. And if you don't like Murdoch, and Murdoch has been sticking you and sticking you and sticking you in the Post, which he has for years, they have a Post watch and all the rest, a Times watch, then I think maybe not so subtly your view of what news is changes.
Can I make the other point here that this appointment says a lot about where the New York Times is going in terms of video components of what they do? And it's something all of us are thinking about. We're not just the printed word anymore. We're not just blogs. We're not just photo galleries, but we're video. And, you know, in a newsroom, these people aren't used to telling stories in the video way. And the New York Times is going to start doing it. And it means that really the true convergence of the media.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. The Times actually does really good quality video now in small.
And you certainly couldn't find anybody except a Brit to come over here, you know.
And there's nobody in America.
And I'm giving you a new nickname.
What is it?
GTS.
GTS.
GTS. Anybody got a guess?
No Pollyanna there.
Yes, Dolly. Pollyanna. Goody Two Shoes.
Oh.
You think so well of everybody.
I thought it said
so
for
nice.
Golly, that's swell. Okay, so, but Sulzberger said as much, basically, as what Judy said. We have people who understand print very well, the best in the business, he said. We have people who understand advertising well, the best in the business. But our future, Sulzberger said, is on to video, to social, to mobile. It doesn't mirror what we've done. It broadens what we're going to do. So, interesting.
Well, you know, I listen to Beeb every morning coming into work. I have an hour in the car. We play the BBC until we go on the air with our own programming. And it's really very interesting. Some days I turn it off and listen to classical music because I can't stand, and boy, am I going to get letters on this, hearing one more awful, depressing story about a different country where somebody is really terrible and doing awful things to the population and rape and murder and, you know, and the rest of it. And I admire the BBC because what happens is if you listen to it, you really get an idea of what's going on in the rest of the world that you never get if you're looking at American media.
That's true. And if you believe that the most important news is that which affects the greatest number of people, then the BBC has the right thing because they're talking about millions of people in sub-Saharan Africa and so on.
Sure.
Our definition of news in this country tends to include proximity as well. So, for example, WAMC reports news of the region that you're covering, and we report news of the capital region, Judy, as well. And so that's one of the differences between, of course, you're picking up the BBC World Service.
That's right.
One of their services, right?
Yeah, sure.
They're probably more local over across the pond. Anyway, pretty interesting. If you're just joining us, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, the CEO thereof. And
did you have enough time to prepare for the show?
I did. I'm basically just making it up, winging it as we go along. Judy Patrick of the Gazette, and I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union. We're damn glad to be here, even if we don't make any sense. 220 million people watch the Olympics, NBC says. How about that?
That's pretty good, isn't it?
That is great.
It's good. But what won the Olympics, 60% of the traffic to the London2012.com website came from mobile devices. Further indication of what's going on here.
Absolutely. And you know, Rex, I was trying to figure out a way to inject the idea that I virtually never use my computer, the big old bulky thing on my desk anymore. I check my email all day long with this thing. I would delete, you know, right here. In the middle of the night, I wake up and I, among other things, I check the New York Times to make sure that I'm not missing anything for the next morning when I'm going to do my commentary. So we've now left these computers that we have in the dust because we're just carrying it around with us all the time. And who knows what's next?
It's truly amazing what's going on. You go out into the world and everyone has a phone in their hand and they're checking it. And the young people are checking it a lot. And even...
But are they checking the news?
I think they're checking a little bit of news. They're checking the movie schedules as well. And they're getting their Groupons. But they're checking the Olympics. And they're checking who won this race.
Do we know which of the events got the most viewership? Probably not. I mean, I personally watch the women's volleyball a lot.
I would say not volleyball again. Isn't there another Olympic sport here?
Not that I'm aware of.
I think that I thought that I read somewhere that the swimming showdown and then at the end of some of the track events were the big draws, supposedly.
Yeah.
But anyway, the question was the nightly average of 31.1 million viewers on NBC that's a number that you rarely reach in any kind of programming.
They pay billions for this right, these rights. Do we know whether they get their money's worth?
Or whether they break even?
Yes.
Oh, I think the sense is that they did very well on this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I heard about 10 days into it. Boy, aren't people eating their words now, those who criticize NBC for doing this because of looking at the traffic, the audience that they've built. I think they made a lot of money on it.
Now, as you know, I'm very slowly reading the Walter Cronkite biography, which is...
Wait a minute, wasn't he reading this three months ago.
Very slowly. Actually, I'll tell you about my reading habits. I put it in the John, you know, and then when I sit down, I read the...
It's probably a good thing that you haven't gotten all the way through it.
Well, right.
TMI.
Oh, no. Too much information. Too much information, but I can tell you, never mind, I'm not going to tell you that. But in the Cronkite book, you know, it all started during his regime. And when he was paying, you know, they were paying maybe a couple $100,000 for exclusive rights, you know, for the Olympics.
Yeah.
And that's where it began. And so now if you attract them to the station, they stay there. So, for example, the news program, which you and I have been batting around, Judy, you're saying it's an entertainment program, and I'm saying it's a news program, you know, the Today Show, they're beating Good Morning America again because of the Olympics, and it carried them into all of this. So even more so than just the advertising money, they get other, you know, benefits, unanticipated sometimes.
And we'll see how long that lasts.
Well, yeah, we will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Did you want to say anything further about the coverage of the Olympics? Did you guys cover this last week?
Who knows? I don't remember what we did last week.
You know, some critics and bloggers were upset that there weren't live events in the afternoon on NBC, even though, of course, you could get it streaming live on the internet. There were a lot of criticisms, which I heard even in this station, of folks.
Well, you know, people bitch and moan and carry on, and anything they can yell about, they yell about, because that's just the way we've built our world.
You know, there was some discussion in our newsroom about whether or not we should post the winners as they came across the AP wire, whether we were ruining it for the people who were watching at night. And, you know, our position is put it up. It's news. It's happened. We're not going to be part of the charade.
I agree with you, Judy.
I do, too. Although it's funny, people complained about both sides of it. They said, you spoiled it for us. And then why is it that NBC is playing it so many hours after the event? How terrible is this? And I don't know. You know, you can't, this is my theme of the week. You can't please people.
Well, the whole thing is so stupid. I mean, honestly, what? You mean you're going to watch some rehashed game which you already know in your mind's eye is already over? I mean, give me a break, will you please? What? How the basketball guy shot the hoop? I mean, you know, very nice. But who cares?
So let me go back into ancient history. When I was an undergraduate, I wrote a research paper on press councils.
I love this subject.
News councils. Yeah. And now it turns out there is but one left in the United States. It's in Washington State, the Washington News Council.
Explain what it is.
It's they are really sort of self-regulatory bodies. The goal is to give the public a place where they can raise concerns about coverage, complaints about media conduct, that kind of thing.
Sort of an ombudsman-like
thing. That's right.
Thing.
And they can come in and get a hearing without having to hire a lawyer or anything. There's no enforcement power except by the publicity.
Yeah. I can't tell you how I hate this.
You know, I had never heard of them.
Really?
Really.
Never.
Wow.
Yeah, well, see, you're a little younger than I am. Because when I was in college, talking 59 to 63, you know, this was a sort of hot topic because people were complaining. But, you know, what happens is you don't only have to worry about the people who don't like what you're doing. You have to worry about your colleagues so that if you're beating the hell out of somebody, they'll say, well, you shouldn't have been giving your opinion. Or you shouldn't have been doing this. I hate the whole thing. I think it's a failure. I think there are people like the New York Post who do take advantage and who do some very bad things, but they are what they are. And sooner or later, you have to know that.
But if there were a news council in this state, and let me say there was a national news council that launched in 1973, but CBS News and the New York Times, then the two leading outlets in television and print, refused to cooperate.
Good for them.
It limped along for about 10 years and then died out.
It's probably some self-serving guy named Oliver Puckerish, you know, who's sitting at the head and said, this will be a good day job for me and I'll do it, you know. The hell with them.
Yeah. You would have to have some concern about who the members of the news council are.
You know,
if they're going to issue rulings, you'd have to assure that they are as fair and equitable, that they understand some of the journalistic pressures and so on. But Alan, to your point about the tabloids, Murdoch's tabloid, for example, there's no place where people actually see evidence of the malfeasance in journalism that they're routinely guilty of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Columbia Journalism Review will write about it, but who in the general public sees that? So that's kind of unfortunate.
The tree is falling in the woods, the church is empty, and somebody's preaching, sure.
But the last U.S. News Council now is getting its last dollop of money. That's the news of things. This Washington News Council is getting a final disbursement of, $100,000 from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and that's it. So,
okay, so would you, because you're the grayest of us in this room.
Oh, well.
No, you are so wonderful. No, Rex's hair.
The grayest.
Rex's hair is getting more and more gray.
Very nice. I'm not the oldest.
Which means you're you're not the oldest. Thank you. But you're the wisest of us.
Yes.
No, well, maybe not wiser than Judy, but wiser than me. So my question is this. If the news councils don't work, and I think we've sort of agreed on that, what is a way? And your point was profound about the New York Post. Nobody really knows what it's doing that's so bad. Unnamed sources and all the rest of it. What would you do in order to even things up?
The Media Project on WAMC.
Well, there is that. Sure.
You know, I think that actually the press needs to have, in effect, watchdog organizations, watchdog programs and columns and so on. But the public just generally won't pay attention. I'm afraid that bad performance by journalism is just one of those things that we tolerate in a society with the First Amendment. I wish there were more folks blowing the whistle on bad press performance.
Well, but don't you think that blogs and that somebody setting up some kind of major thing, this whole situation is just begging for that?
Yeah. You know, the difficulty is, how do you separate valid and thoughtful press criticism, which is a good thing, from folks just on the attack because of their personal biases?
But shouldn't there be something called thepresscritic.com? And when you get a couple of gray-haired professors of journalism and some other people who do take a look at it, you make sure that it's balanced so that you get a conservative as well as...
But how's that different from a news council, which you said you hate the idea of?
Well, no. I hate the idea of a news council with sort of semi-formalistic responsibilities. But I love the idea of criticism of the press. And I think my experience has been, and I don't want to go here because I have some personal issues, has been that there are certain internal rules in some newspapers, like one I know of, in which the word went out, at least to me, we don't criticize other columnists, so that you can't even have internal critique within a newspaper because of the sort of self-serving rules.
You know, there's no easy answer here. But one of the things to keep in mind is that the cream does rise, that if you do good journalism, over time, you do establish a good reputation and more people will buy or read your product. I think that if you do bad journalism, your credibility will get diminished just because the reader, you know, readers buy into a lot of bad journalism, but over time, I think they do learn. If something's wrong, eventually it will come out. And online, you get this discussion. Sometimes the online discussions aren't great, and sometimes they're wrong, but sometimes you really do get a good, solid discussion of the merits of a story.
You're very optimistic.
Yeah, if there's one thing you can say about Judy, who's really the nicest person, she is very optimistic about human nature and all the rest of it. I, on the other hand, go the other way.
Yeah. Your cream doesn't rise. I mean, this
is...
there's no cream here.
Oh, well, what can you say? It's just one of those...
It's so clear you're not prepared for this.
No, I wanted to make note of the Paul Ryan pick. I wanted to go back to the selection of a vice president, because there are some in the broader sense of the media who are taking credit for this.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean that Rush Limbaugh is saying that...
I picked him?
Yeah, basically that he's the one who urged it.
He's a big fat liar.
But here's the point where the media can congratulate itself. The press beat the Romney campaign to the announcement. The Romney campaign was marketing this iPad app that said you can get the app and be the first to find out who the pick was. The Obama campaign did this last time, too. They said put us on, although it was an email blast. And, of course, it was 2 hours after it had first been reported that Ryan was to be the vice presidential nominee before the folks who signed up for that app got the word. So
I fooled you.
NBC, I think, had it first, if you want bragging rights there. Anyway.
You can take an extra half a minute, Rex. David will take this out of here, but you can take an extra half a minute because there's been so much stuff that's coming out between the various...
Alan thinks I've been stumbling so much during the show that we're going to have to do some editing.
Not at all.
And in Rex's defense, poor guy didn't get a chance to read anything before we came in here.
Poor guy.
He gets it all on the email. What is it?
I'm a very busy man. With that, we're going to have to leave the program until next week, and we hope that this won't frustrate you so much, but that you'll join us again then. Thanks.
And we'll discuss next time whether Hillary will be the vice presidential candidate at the last minute because of what the press has been writing.
Oh, the press.
By the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-ling-ling, city desk, Pull the press, pull the press. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such...